Our next speaker is Chris Nichols. This is a multi-institutional paper. Chris and Jeff Moyer, co-author at Rodale, Kathleen Dellett at Iowa State, and Brad Hines at the University of Minnesota. So, Chris.
Thank you. As Pat indicated, this is sort of a multi-location project. What I want to discuss here is mostly what we've done at the Rodale Institute as a component of this project. And hopefully next year or the year after probably we'll be presenting more of a synthesis of the project as a whole. So this project was organized around the idea of soil health. And at the Rodale Institute, we focus a lot on soil health. Our founder basically wrote this on a chalkboard in 1942, that healthy soil equals healthy food equals healthy people. And so that was a lot of how this program was organized in being able to take a look at it. Again, as was indicated, this was a replicated trial at the Rodale Institute, at Iowa State University, and at the University of Minnesota. We have two crop sequences that are involved in this. The crop sequences are a pasture rye soybean or a pasture wheat corn system. And the different locations had some different starting periods for this. So at Iowa State, it started in the corn soybean phase. And at the University of Minnesota and at Rodale, we both started in the pasture phase, depending on where we were when the project initiated. And what we did was, it is a integrated crop livestock experiment. So we had grazing of the pasture phase, and then we also did flash grazing of the small grains in the spring period. And the focus mostly on this was, again, looking at soil health and at human health. So we are taking samples to look at human pathogen concentration in the manure on the forages as well as in the meat when we're going to be harvesting the livestock. So this was in 2015. This was sort of the design that we set up at the Rodale Institute, where, again, we have the S1. So for the different crop sequences, there was sequence 1 and sequence 2. And it was an 8-acre plot that was split in half, and then we also split it into 4 rotational grazing areas, and then we also included within there the orange squares represent never grazed exclosure areas that we'll have in that system. So we've got sites that are never going to be grazed over the whole project period, and then we have sites that are going to be grazed during the livestock phases in there. The numbers that are below that are the numbers equating to the amount of biomass that was harvested from these strips with the rotational grazing. In Pennsylvania, one of the things that we did was because of our precipitation rates in comparison to Iowa and Minnesota, we did do additional sort of harvesting. So we had both harvesting that happened with the livestock grazing as well as harvesting that we did by haying off the plots as well. So we rotated the animals through the plots. They were moved every 2 weeks through the different rotational phases. And then we also came behind, since there was the 4 rotational strips in there, we also came behind so that basically every 2 weeks, the plots were either harvested by grazing or they were harvested by haying through this period of time. So we were looking at trying to see what would happen with the sort of intensity of harvest management in these systems. And again, as you can see, there was a pretty distinct difference depending on when we first started the animals. So they started in the grazing one. So the G's indicate the rotational grazing phase that you're in. So it was G1, G2, G3, and G4 across the system. And then the R's are basically just the replicate plots that we would take samples from within each of those blocks that we have set up there. So as you can see, it was sort of the grazing phase two that had the highest biomass production over the year that we had going through. And that was kind of really interesting to see that you would have, you know, it wasn't where we first put the animals on. It was the place that we moved to second throughout the grazing phase. And then when we got towards the end, because a lot of that biomass, by the time we got to the last two strips, was not a very high quality type of forage when the animals first got on there, that sort of changed the amount of production that we had in those systems. Excuse me. So, again, what we were looking at was the biomass production. We're also looking at soil health parameters. I don't have all of the soil health data because that's something we're taking initial samples we took before the animals went on there, and then we're going to be taking samples at the end to get the final numbers with that. So I'm not going to be discussing that. What we did see, because we started in the pasture phase, there was obviously no difference between the crop sequences, because they were at the same phase when we started. As I indicated, there were differences between the grazing strips, and the biomass in the exclosures actually was significantly lower than in any other of the rotational phases. So when we don't have any type of grazing, we're going to get a lower level of biomass production in that area. So, you know, that was another interesting thing to take a look at. We had 9 steers in each crop sequence, and they grazed for a total of 150 days throughout the season. They had an average daily rate of gain of 1.68 pounds per day. And then in the fall of 2015, we planted the rye and the winter wheat, the small grains that we grazed this spring. As far as food safety parameters are going, when we looked at the fecal samples, we had one fecal sample that had E. coli 0157H7 in it, and 2 feed samples. And we had one feed sample that had salmonella in it. And these values were significantly lower than the values that you would find in published reports for organic production systems. So as you can see, we didn't have E. coli levels as high as have been seen in other types of results. So we were definitely below the concentrations that would be for concern. In 2016, because we were trying to do more of a high-intensity flash grazing over our small grain plots, one of the things that we decided to do was a little bit of a mob grazing type of thing where we created smaller mini plots within those rotational phases. So each strip that you see here is going to be grazed, so you can ignore basically the black lines and just look at the blue lines right now, because each strip was a different mini plot that we had the animals in. And the reason we did that was we wanted to make sure that the animals were grazing over those plots equally. So we did some smaller plots, and then we moved them on a daily basis across the whole area. And then we also had the mini plots that were separated into the different rotational phases that you had in there. So we're still processing the data to look at what the impact of these different rotational phases that we imposed in 2015 had on the overall biomass production in those areas. If you look at the data that's below, you have the 2016 ungrazed biomass data, which means that those were from areas that were not in the exclosures, but they were outside of the blue lines. So that was the biomass production that we had that was outside of an area that wasn't grazed in 2016. When we've got the grazed biomass areas, those were the areas that were inside the blue lines. And then we've got both the biomass production and the grain yield production in those plots. And you can see that there was a difference between the rye and wheat that was mostly for a crop difference. But there was also a difference between the amount that you had in the ungrazed, what hadn't been grazed in 2016, as opposed to what was grazed in 2016. So the grazing did have an effect, but the effect that it had was fairly minimal on biomass that you would have there. And there is some potential, though, that the grazing in 2016 did help a little bit with yield production in those systems. So that's the last number that you'll see there. So again, we're working on teasing out the data for all of these different phases that you would have in this system, all of the different strips. So this is just kind of to give you an idea of what the plots looked like in 2016. We had the small grains that we went out there and grazed, and then you can see how we set up our mini plots within there, being able to move the animals. This grazing period occurred just over a 14-day period from April 25th to May 6th. The idea behind this is, again, could we maybe get something where we could put animals onto a winter crop, a winter cereal crop, before spring pastures may be ready for the animals to be grazing on those spring pastures. So it's a way of being able to help a livestock producer be able to have some early season grazing before the spring pastures are ready, and then be able to move that into a later grazing period. So, we had grain yield data that we took from our combine. This is grain yield data that we took from biomass samples that we got in that system. Some similar trends that we're starting to see within there. And this here is where we also can compare to a never grazed type of system. So we've got a potential difference in the amount that you would have in a never grazed system. In that system, we seem to have a little bit of a higher yield amount in the rye and a little bit of in-between yield amount with the wheat in that phase. And again, this was just based on the grain that we harvested in the biomass. So we need to calibrate those numbers a little bit differently from what we got the data in the combine, obviously. And so with that, I will take any questions you might have. Yes.
Do you have time for questions?
I'm wondering if you had any challenge with the grazing period for the sake of the research versus the environment, and then your three different states on your fields. I mean, did you have to, you said you had X number of animals, X number of time grazing. Did you have an issue with, you know, they had poor rain here, or the stand wasn't as well established in one area? And did you have to deal with that? How did you account for it?
So the question was, how did we deal with the fact that we have different precipitation patterns, different temperature patterns in the three locations? The way that this experiment is designed is that we're not setting it up so that every trial location is grazing on the exact same days. The idea is it's an overall system design comparison, as opposed to being able to compare exactly what's happening. So again, as I said, in 2015, we had a much higher forage production than you would see in either Minnesota or Iowa, so we got a lot more sampling periods that we took off in that system. And so, you know, we're not looking at that level of a comparison. It's a comparison of a systems. Yeah, it's a good question.
Okay.